Welcome to Education Currents, a show designed to provide educational news and commentary from a Christian worldview. The greatest resource any community has is its children. And by providing for them the best possible education, we are providing for ourselves and future generations. Join us as we explore the latest social and political issues surrounding education today.
Welcome. I'm Dr. Richard Tooley, and with me here today is Dr. Rose Gamblin. And we are going to be discussing something that is of interest and germane to everyone who has students in school. And that is the issue of what school do you send your child to? Should you look for a small school or should you go to a big school?
Yes, and I'll ask you the questions, Dr. Tooley, because I know you feel pretty strong about this topic. So, overarching, we have large schools with all kinds of programming, and we have small schools, and they really try their best too at providing lots of extracurricular activities. Just why would you, as a parent, send your child to a small school versus a large school?
You know, I've had the opportunity of actually going to both, and there are a lot of programs in large schools, and there's a lot of benefits to going to a large school if you like some of the extracurricular programming. But when you start digging into the research of large schools versus small schools, things get a little more interesting. And I think we can break it out into maybe two or three different categories. We can start off with the leadership component, for example. The opportunity to be a leader in a small school is significantly greater than it is in a large school.
I'd like a specific example of a child who maybe came from a large school and his talents or her talents weren't fully realized, and tell the parents place that child in a small school. Can you give us an example of that?
Well, we've had children that have come into our schools who have come from large schools. So when they come from the large school, I'm thinking of one young man who came from a large school and pretty much was lost in that large school. He's just absorbed because so many other people had so many other skills in terms of leadership that there was not a chance for him to even begin to grow in his leadership skills. Coming to a small school, when he first came in the door, you know, you thought, well, he's not going to go anywhere. He just kind of putted along. But in small schools, there's no chance for everybody to just be bench warmers. Everybody has to be involved. There's SA officers, and in a small school, usually when you get the SA officers, it takes up the whole class to be part of the SA. Well, so you have to have a leadership position in a small school. Matter of fact, there was one college recruiter who was talking about that, said, you know, in the small schools, we give scholarships for leadership, and it's really, really kind of difficult because in the small schools, everybody gets a scholarship for leadership. But in the large schools, everybody doesn't have that same opportunity. And that's true. In the small schools, everyone takes on a leadership role of some form or another. And this young man ended up taking on a leadership role. Well, you could watch over the years him develop from not talking to actually being able to get up front and do things. And there was another young lady, same situation there, where when they were brought into the small school, they were put into leadership roles, and they were excited about getting those leadership roles, actually, because that had never happened to them before.
Yeah.
And now what do I do with it? And you could see that happening. But you would also see in the smaller schools, because of the classroom sizes generally are smaller, there's much more interaction between students in a smaller school and in a smaller classroom. And that interaction usually translated into some form of mentorship, depending upon the culture of the school. But in this school, the culture was set up so that they did mentor. They wanted everybody to succeed.
You know, we're pretty passionate about small schools because we both have taught and continue to teach in small schools. We see these children blossom on a regular basis. We're always surprised. I wonder why we're so surprised, but it's just the human experience to have a child come in very sometimes depressed, very withdrawn, very introspective. And then all of a sudden that child starts volunteering to do things and speaking up when, let's say they're on a team, a leadership team for worship, speaking up and saying, I'm the one in charge now. And the boy you were talking about, how old was he when he came to your school?
He came when he was in the sixth grade. And actually, when you first saw him, when he first came in, he was one of those kids who spent most of his time trying to hide.
Yeah. Yes. I have had children say, well, where I came from, I was always called Shorty, or I had this one little girl, and I only got to have her for 6 months. Sad to say, but in that time, you know, she shared, we had an experience where a journaling experience where we were to write about an experience that we'd had where we'd been bullied. Now, I've done the same exercise in large public school classrooms with 26 and 27 kids in a classroom. And in that situation, because you can't possibly have all 26 children share their journal entries each day, you do a thing with fairness sticks or something like that, where you just pick five people randomly to share. But this was a smaller class, so I still use the fairness sticks, but each stick got pulled. And then the child could say, yes, they wanted to read their journal entry, or no, they didn't want to read their journal entry. You know, it was a want-to-get-to experience, which I hope all educators try to give as many of those choices to students as possible. Anyway, so when her name was picked to read, and most of the time she said pass, but this day she wanted to read. And so she started reading about at her old school. Because her eyes were slightly slanted, she would always be called a Chinese girl. And at some point one day, she started crying because they would call her China, 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 meaning little Chinese girl. And so then when she started crying, then they even had more material to make fun of her. Oh, the China girl. Oh, her eyes do have real tears. And as she's reading this, the students were visibly shaken that someone could be so mistreated. And of course, me as the teacher, I'm going, well, this isn't that bad. You know, there's a lot worse things to be treated bad about. But I saw her, you know, tear up at the experience. And I thought, you know, isn't it something how we always talk about creating a safe learning environment?
Yeah, and they try this in large schools and do their best at it.
Yeah, but you can't be in the locker area. You can't be walking down the halls. There's just, you cannot cover every single area in that school. But in a small school, you definitely have a much more hands-on opportunity as that educator to create really safe learning environment. So we've talked a little bit about leadership, and we've talked about creating a safe learning environment. What about individualization? Is that an important aspect of education?
Well, that's an interesting question. One of the things as Christians we have in our perspective is that each one of us are of a unique value. We're not part of the masses.
Mm-hmm.
We're not just another organism among organisms. And to be able to create that individualized value is a very important thing. In a large classroom or in a large school, that's very, very hard to do. Generally speaking, the principal of a large high school will have a hard time knowing all of the students that are going to that school. I know that the school that I attended had 2,000 students in it. Well, 2,000 students is much more than one principal is going to meet mm-hmm. or talk to, or the only time people were able to see the principal generally was when they were in trouble or at a pep rally where he happened to show up.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody's not going to be spending time talking with the principal, nor are they going to be spending a lot of time talking with the teachers, because everybody is competing for time.
Yes. Is there any outside research that shows to the value of small schools?
Oh, there's a lot of research that shows it. And you can start with, we talked about leadership, you can talk about academics. Small schools score better on the academics generally than the larger schools. Now, that's not always the case. And large schools do a good job, but it's rather interesting. When we were talking about small schools versus large schools, one of the studies that I had showed that the amount of time that was spent on core classes was greater in large schools than it was in small schools. Yet the test scores were higher in the small schools than they were the large schools, which is kind of interesting. So when you think about that, one of the other areas that's very, very significant, and this one I think is really, really critical, is the small schools showed a higher level of civic responsibility than the large schools did. And it also showed several other things, one of which was there was a much greater respect for the institution and for the teachers and for self in the small school than there was in the large school. And students tended to like where they were more when they were in a small school versus the large school. So this is the hidden civics that go on in the schools, the small school versus the large school. And I think there's some correlation, even if you think about the study that Annington did a few years back, where they compared schools of different socioeconomic brackets, all of them, they were public schools, all of them using the same curriculum. And the ones that were in the upper class, the teachers respected the students, where when you got to the lower class, the teachers demanded respect of the students. And between that, the range was tremendous. And what people learned, they learned leadership in the top schools, and they learned obedience or following the rules or just compliance. Getting by or compliance in the lower schools. Mm-hmm. In a small school, you get a combination of all of those there. You get the respect for each other that you can develop among the students, the respect for the faculty, and you can get a respect for the institution itself. So there's many things that are worth talking about when you're starting to talk about a small school. Does it cost money? Absolutely, it costs money. But I think it's a well worth investment. And I think we can dig more into this. We can talk about these civics.
Well, we have to take a break right here. But when we come back, I have a few more questions. I want to talk about flexibility, curriculum, social skills, some of these we've hit upon. And we'll just review. We're talking about large schools versus small schools. We'll be right back. You've been listening to Education Currents. Be sure to like us on our Education Currents Facebook page and consider joining MRG Media in this radio ministry. You can call us anytime at 301-824-3162. That's 301-824-3162. Or write to MRG Media at P.O. Box 413, Smithsburg, Maryland, 21783. That's P.O. Box 413, Smithsburg, Maryland, 21783. Welcome back. I'm here with Dr. Richard Tooley and I'm Dr. Rose Gamblin, and both of us have been immersed in education all of our lives. Our parents were teachers and educators, both public and private school. And we even, if we go back a little further, we find teachers clear back five generations. So you can see that it's, you know, not only something we're passionate about, but it's in our blood. And we just so much enjoy talking to you each day about education. And today we're talking about large schools versus small schools. And just before the break, Dr. Tooley, you talked about some of the research that was done on small schools versus large schools. And it brought to mind that one study where the Bill Gates Foundation, after the Harvard study on small versus large schools, they poured billions of dollars into a particular school district to try to convert that school district to a number of small schools. I mean, they poured billions of dollars into it, and it didn't happen. Now, why do you suppose something that we have all this research on, that small schools are better than large schools, we still continue to build larger and larger schools?
That's an interesting question. And there is some research on that, because after they spent all of that money and it didn't happen, they went in to talk to all of the major stakeholders and all of the players in trying to create that conversion. And what they found out is that even after the 3 years of preparation before they started the process of trying to do the conversion, and through the process of trying to convert and in the failure, that there never was a clear alignment or consensus of what the objective was and why. And that created a lot of confusion in the process of doing this. Now, one of the things I think, if you were to look at it, and I'm conjecturing here a little bit, that people run into is that sometimes in America we get the idea that larger is better. You know, supersize me mentality. And for anyone who wants upward mobility, certainly if you were the principal of a school, say, with 30 kids versus a school with 300 kids or a school with 3,000 kids, the status is certainly there for you, because if you can be in a larger school and you're dealing with layers of bureaucracy that you don't have to deal with on those smaller schools, and you're more insulated, actually, from the students, the higher you are. So it may be that that played into it, is that particularly among the administration people, it was easier to work with a large school than it is to work with a small school. And in your experience, do you find it really easy to work with a large school or a small school?
Yeah, it seems like in my experience, the smaller the school, the more politically charged. And I think it's for a good reason that everyone's taking ownership and they all want a say and they all believe that their way is the right way. So you have to be pretty astute and pretty patient when you're dealing with a small school. Now, with a large school, I'm imagining that that principal then just mainly supervises his vice principals, his SAs, and support staff, and then they then go in turn monitor the teachers, and then the teachers then can take their little circle of influence and treat it as a small school within a large school.
Some of that could happen, and I believe in certain schools it does. If I could correlate that again with the Aniton study, I believe at the upper schools and the upper social economic schools and the mid upper socioeconomic schools did a lot more of that. You can do different things, creative things with the students you have. But then again, it depends on how you structure your school. You know, are you doing everybody spending all their time in the homeroom, or are you running a schedule where you move students from one classroom to the next, or teachers from one classroom to the next? How do you do that and then be able to create that community among those students that involves you as the teacher?
Yes, and I have, you know, some experience in teaching seventh grade, but I did have a lot of students passing through me each day, jumping against my psychic each day. And I count as almost 90. Yeah, I think it was close to 90. I had 30, 32, and 27. We did create kind of a community. It definitely, I could have done a lot more, but other teachers came and told me, counseled me against it, you know, because I just started, you know, helping students after school. I thought that was a good thing to do. And I allowed students to come and eat lunch with me at lunchtime. It was things that we normally just take for granted in a small school. We all eat lunch together, and until they go home, you know, I'm with them after school. But there, when the other teachers found out that I was doing it, they really, you know, had a number of them come and counsel me against it. you know, you'll just get taken advantage of. You will be worn out. It's really not a good idea to have them come to your classroom to eat lunch, because then they'll all want to come to your classroom to eat lunch. And I could see why. I mean, there were some horrible things that happened during lunchtime. In this particular school, they crowded all of the classes together. So you had like 400 kids at a time during their lunchtime. There was more than 400 kids in the school. And then the janitors were the marshals of lunch. No teachers had to sit with any children during lunch. And so they positioned themselves out around the lunch eating area. And the kids got by with a lot. Very sneaky. You know, they stole other kids' food. They spit on other kids' food. They spit in other kids' hair. They put food underneath kids when they went to sit down. And for whatever reason, 7th and 8th graders don't tell on each other because, I mean, they don't tell another trusted adult for something like that, because then it's just even, they get even more persecuted. So those kinds of things went on in a school that claimed to be bully-free.
You know, and that's interesting. It almost sounds like what you'd see in a prison cafeteria.
It really felt like we were preparing students for an institutionalized life.
You know, the difference there, when you start talking about that, the difference there, when we started talking about the small school again, the thing that is rather interesting is that in the small school, generally speaking, the teachers are right in among the students when the students have lunch. The teachers are with the students, and so the in the classroom, and the role seems to be something different. The role of the teacher seems to be much more of a collaborative, cooperative, community person in a small school. Now, I know that in a large school, teachers do have a sphere of influence, and they do have students that are with them, but the boundaries have to be much more strict and very well kept because of the number of students that each teacher is coming in contact with every day.
Yeah. Well, it was an eye-opener for me, and I'm totally sold on the idea that a small school is much better for a child than a large school.
Now, we'll touch on some other things here real briefly, because I know our time is running out. What you don't get in a small school, you do not get the opportunity for sports at the same level that you would in a larger school. You don't get the opportunity for some of the extracurricular things at the level that you do in a larger school. There's not as many opportunities for different clubs, for example. There's not the same opportunity for monies for paying for things like in the STEM area, where some schools can have very, very sophisticated robotics programs and other things that could involve a lot of other people. You're not going to get those things in a small school. It just simply isn't going to happen that way. But what you do get is you get the sense of community. You get the opportunity for leadership. You get much more one-on-one time between the teacher and the students. All of those things in the long run seem to outweigh the things that you can get. You know, it's kind of like rich parent, poor parent type thing. It isn't the things you get your children that counts. It's you. And the same thing would hold true in a classroom. So, with that, we're going to sign off now, and I have just one last thing to say. Keep learning.
You have been listening to Education Current, a production of MRG Media Ministries. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.